I think this is becoming the theme song for Joe Patrick's interviews, and I definitely don't hate it. Da-na-na, da-na. It fits the mood of the night. Gorgeous night here in the A in the great state of Georgia.
I feel like we're the only show that's put very like distinct thought into the song that welcomes in Joe Patrick when he does an appearance.
Well, I can tell you this. I'm not doing no boxing match clashing or anything like that and listing heights and weights as is done on other shows. We get straight to the business with Joe Patrick.
He doesn't cause trouble with us.
No, we're not.
There's no trouble with Joe and you and I on the show.
We're not looking to cause a ruckus. We're looking to get Falcons information and promote his podcast, Joe Patrick on Football. That's all we're here to do. So let's welcome him in on the way. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
This song is the most confrontational or whatever the word is they use for me.
Yeah, that's
over on Andy and Randy.
It's your non-confrontational driving playlist. That's what we pull
from.
That's right. That's what we do here. All right, Joe, camp is underway. Before we get into the nuts and bolts, just give me a vibe check. What was the sights and sounds yesterday from Flower?
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. I mean, like, first of all, you know, I just kind of get the, you know, the not butterflies, but just, like, I get excited, like, when I go park, you know, and see all the other fans walking next to me with their folding chairs and whatnot, and you see the massive line out in front of the facility. So just, and then obviously they come in and there's a big crowd. See players going over, you know, over to the hill and signing autographs and doing those kinds of things. Didn't have anyone do a Cordero Patterson style, just like leave practice in the middle of drills to go sign autographs from the fans. But maybe that's something only Cordero Patterson ever had the right to do. But no, that was obviously great. You know, you get the quote from Michael Penix saying that we, you know, should be the best offense in the NFL, which I, you know, that's just like a classic first day of training camp kind of, you know, high vibes comment. So, and it's like, no, I don't know, like, with that comment specifically, like, I don't think anybody actually takes it serious, but everybody likes hearing it, even though they're not taking it seriously, because that's just the kind of thing you kind of want to hear on the first day of that confidence being exuded from the players. So, yeah, it was a great day overall.
Speaking of Michael Penix Jr., the other thing he said that made national headlines and made sort of the story out of day one about Kyle Pitts was that him walking in unprompted into the room and being like, yeah, you guys see we got Pitts the ball a lot, huh? Yeah, we're going to do a lot more of that. Were you surprised that that sort of picked up steam and became the talking point nationally around day one for Falcons?
You know, I was a little, I don't know, I guess surprised is a word you could use for, like, you know, my feelings of him just kind of uttering that, you know, obviously in front of everybody, but before the press conference had kind of officially started. But it was kind of like a Kyle Pitts day, you know, like he was kind of the headliner of the day. And it started even before the practice where Raheem Morris was speaking about him. And, you know, I think Raheem does a good job of kind of addressing the Kyle Pitts situation head on, where he's like, listen, like everybody is, you know, like wondering how we get this guy back to his rookie year. Like that's always the conversation. Raheem Morris is not shy in avoiding it. And it's true, you know, that's the reason why. And the thing that was interesting about what Raheem said was that they could start to, you know, mix in a little bit more 12 personnel than what we saw last year, where they kind of said this, and, you know, again, and we take this with a grain of salt because we'll see when you know, it comes to the regular season, if this actually plays out, because they were saying last year they wanted to diversify, you know, Zach Robinson's offense from being such 11 personnel focus like he was under Sean McVay, obviously with Sean McVay calling the plays. Turns out they were in as much 11 personnel, or if not more, than Sean McVay was last year. The Falcons had the fewest amount of different personnel, basically groupings of 11 players on the field at a time on offense than any other team in the NFL. But anyway, all this to say is that, you know, there was some talk about Kyle Pitts kind of being split out more as a receiver. You know, Penix also spoke after the practice about, you know, finding good matchups for him and that being key. And if they can do that, then they can get him the football. But we also saw it, you know, during the practice of them, you know, getting him the ball and him doing these things, being split out, also being, you know, playing in line, of course, like he always would, but just like diversifying his game a little bit. And, you know, maybe going back to some of the things that are frankly most natural to him, which is kind of just playing as a big, powerful wide receiver, essentially. And he did do like the wide receiver drills and stuff and individual drills. So very interesting first day for Kyle Pitts. And I was willing to say is like, he's going to be back. I'm not there yet, but I do think that this is actually the right track if he is to replicate or get close to what he did his rookie season. I think that what they put on display for him the first day is the way that you get there.
How long did it take after the Fields news for people to start saying Kirk Cousins?
It was funny. That was like going around, the media all started talking about on the sidelines, like while we're watching practice. And, you know, I was kind of joking. It's like, man, you wonder if his agent, Mike McCartney, has like, you know, a signal in the radio to like tell him middle of practice. But and then, of course, it turns out to like really not be a significant injury. But it was definitely going around. And I got to say, you could almost sense it from the crowd, too, because I know there were people who were in the crowd who I was actually seeing tweets about it on social media while I was down there. So you know that it was kind of buzzing around the place when it happened, which was interesting. That's the first time I can remember where there's been like NFL news that's happening during an NFL practice that could, you know, drastically impact one of the, you know, key players that's currently on the team right now. But, you know, it turns out to be kind of a nothing burger. So we'll see.
A clean cut, as we're talking to Joe Patrick on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, our Falcons insider. And make sure you check out his new podcast, Joe Patrick on Football, on the Odyssey app as well. Caleb McGarry, no longer looking as Viking-esque, but equally as large and intimidating with the short haircut and the trim beard. He addressed the media, and he was his usual no-nonsense self. But what did you take away from what he had to say about his first season becoming the blind side for Penix?
He's no nonsense, but he's also like, I just can't, like, I like giggle like while he's talking, just because of, he has like a wry sense of humor to him. And, you know, there were major question marks about him, or maybe not major question marks, but there were some question marks, I guess, coming into the camp because nobody had seen him over the course of the offseason. Of course, his absences had been excused by Raheem Morris. There was no fines for any of the Falcons players who missed any time during OTAs, or, you know, that's not that they would get fined for that, but for mandatory minicamp, you know, absences or whatnot. And, you know, he's going into the last year of his contract, and the fact that he's now the blindside protector, you know, made me wonder if maybe there was going to, he could potentially leverage that situation to try to see if he could get something, you know, a new contract maybe for himself. He was asked about that situation, and while he's clearly willing to play, and he basically said as much, you know, when he talked to us, he did say, he goes, you know, there's nobody more willing to accept money than I am, or something along those lines, which I thought was just a humorous way to phrase that. But, you know, probably true, of course. And one of the journalists reminded him that he's speaking to journalists. So, you know, we're always willing to take money as well. But, no, I mean, obviously, you know, I think he would like to get something done, but, you know, he clearly has a good rapport with the organization and obviously with his teammates as well. And he seems to, by the way, sounds like he's feeling better than he ever has. He had a off-season arthroscopic surgery, not really surgery, but like arthroscopic procedure on his ankle to get rid of some bone spurs, he said. And he said that his ankle now feels better than any joint has felt in his body for a long time now. So hopefully that can, you know, produce some good play from him.
All right. So you know where I'm going to go with this, Joe. If you put 1 + 1 together, it equals 2. If you put Darnell Mooney leaving practice early yesterday and signing DJ Chark today, you can get some maybe unwarranted worry because we don't know the extent of the injury yet. What is your best sniffing around telling you about what's going on with Mooney and the reason for signing Chark?
Yeah, I mean, I think there could be something up here. I mean, we'll get more clarification on tomorrow. I don't want to kind of speak out of turn before we, you know, actually get some solid confirmation on the situation from Raheem Morris. And I should say that the team is not necessarily required to give, you know, a specific injury information or really any injury information. But I would think that we will hear something about it. It's going to be a talking point. And I saw the moment happened very clearly. It happened pretty much right in front of me. And like when he came down, I went, ooh, like I winced because, and I turned to somebody, I said, you know, it's incredible these football players can just kind of like get up from that. Because if that were me, I would need to be stretchered off. And that's how I winced because I feel like how I would feel if that were to happen. So I was actually even kind of, impressed by the fact that he got up basically after that. You know, he stayed down for a little bit, but then a teammate, you know, reached out his hand, he grabbed it and pulled himself up. He ran back to the area where the players were congregated behind the huddles. And you could see him like kind of putting his arms out. You could see him kind of like trying to do something in the upper body. And you would think that there would be something. If he does have an injury, it might be to like that shoulder area. So I think that's what we're looking out for. But he would certainly, if it is a significant injury and he's going to miss time, I mean, you know, you don't need me to tell you that that's a very big loss for this team, because not only is he productive, but he just adds like the archetype that he is and the speed that he presents to this offense is not so easily replicated.
All right, Joe, I need you to help me with something here a little outside the box. What's going on in MLS with this whole Messi skipping the All-Star game and getting suspended for a match thing? I was doing a little reading. It seems like Zlatan Ibrahimovic did the same thing a couple of years ago, but not a good look for your league when the best player in it is skipping the All-Star game and he's not injured.
No, it's not. And that's why I think that the commissioner, Don Garber, came out today and levied a suspension towards to Lionel Messi and Jordi Alba, who both skipped the All-Star game, to kind of like, you know, put their foot down a little bit and, you know, saying like, you listen, like, you can't make a mockery of, you know, this product essentially that we sell and we put out there. We at least try to pretend like we take seriously. And then of course the Miami owners came out today, Jorge Mas, who's like a big power player in world soccer, and said that it was actually a club decision for them. So the club kind of protecting those players, saying that it was actually their decision. So, you know, they're just saying that to kind of take the, I think, some of the blowback off of the individuals. Having said that, Chris, like, I can't blame them. Like, they're older players. I can't blame the club, certainly, for wanting to hold them out. And, you know, I never know how my feelings on All-Star games kind of reflect the popular sentiment, the mass sentiment, because, you know, I'm in a different role. I'm not really a quote-unquote fan. But, like, I don't know what people are getting out of an MLS All-Star game. Again, they got to sell it. They can sell sponsorships on it and everything and make some money off of it, I'm sure. But it is ultimately an exhibition. And, again, I can't blame any of these guys for wanting to skip it. And it's not like this is the first – like, we've seen this, I feel like, in other sports. You see guys skip out on this stuff all the time, whether it's the NBA, where this has kind of become almost commonplace. Or, you know, in baseball, All-Star games, you might see a guy with a little back injury or something. So, yeah, it's just one of those situations. And I think the league's going to have to deal with it. I don't think they can really count on these kinds of star players, especially these older ones, wanting to play in this type of games.
Before I let you go, here's what I don't understand about it. To my knowledge, unless something changed, when Messi came to MLS, did he not get a stake in it? Like, isn't he vested into making sure that the product is as good as possible?
You know, that's a good question. You're asking the wrong guy, probably. He did get some sort of ownership. So I believe it's in his club, though, which I guess, like, you could say that is also kind of part of MLS. You know, it is a single entity league. So I'm not exactly sure how all that breaks down. But I know that, like, his contract was kind of unique because it did involved some of this kind of equity stuff, because he's so important to what they're trying to do there in Miami. So, yeah, there is that. And so I think that that's why they got to get this sorted out. And it's not really like a really strong players union. It feels like there's some disconnection there between the players union, which and the league. And if they want to continue this type of thing, I think they got to just get people in a room, sit them down and, you know, talk about the pain points that there are for players and the league and figure out how they can best resolve the situation.
Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll check back in on Monday. Camp gets restarted on Tuesday. Looking forward to it.
All right, me too. Thanks, Chris.
All right, that is Joe Patrick there, our Falcons insider.